A woman loses her sight and suddenly sees people in elaborate Eastern costumes parading through her room. A mountain climber, trapped and injured, hears a commanding voice directing his survival. An artist on Parkinson's medication watches his apartment fill with phantom visitors emerging from secret chambers. These aren't stories of madness. They're windows into how every human brain constructs the reality we take for granted. Hallucinations reveal something profound. Perception itself is an act of creation, and sometimes our minds generate entire worlds without any external input at all. Deprive your brain of sensory input, and it doesn't go quiet. It throws a party. In the 1950s, McGill researchers placed students in sensory deprivation chambers, expecting boredom. Instead, hallucinations emerged in predictable waves. First, simple geometric patterns, then elaborate wallpaper designs. Finally, complete scenes like squirrels marching across snowfields carrying tiny sacks. This isn't a bug, it's a feature. Your visual cortex craves stimulation so intensely that without it, it generates its own content. Endurance athletes hallucinate after days without sleep. Prisoners in solitary confinement see geometric patterns. Brain imaging confirms that during these episodes, visual areas activate as vigorously as during actual perception, but the prefrontal regions that normally distinguish imagination from reality remain silent. The brain truly believes it's seeing something real, because neurologically speaking, it is. Charles Bonnet syndrome sounds like science fiction. Lose your vision, gain an endless silent movie. Rosalie, an elderly woman Sachs treated, watched people in exotic dress perform mysterious activities in her room. When told this was a recognized condition, not madness, she proudly announced, "I have Charles Bonnet syndrome." Named after an 18th century naturalist who documented his grandfather's experiences, this syndrome affects countless visually impaired people who suffer in silence, fearing psychiatric diagnoses. The hallucinations follow patterns: geometric forms first, then faces and figures, finally elaborate scenes. One musician saw impossibly complex musical scores superimposed on everything. What's remarkable, these visions often exceed normal vision in vividness and detail. Brain imaging reveals why. Specific hallucination types activate precise visual regions. Faces light up the fusiform gyrus. Colors activate area V4. Text stimulates the visual word form area. The brain doesn't imagine these visions. It genuinely sees them, filling the void left by absent eyes with its own elaborate creations. Vision isn't the only sense that hallucinates. Mary developed progressive smell distortions after surgery. Tomatoes tasted metallic, lettuce smelled of turpentine, meat seemed rotten. Eventually, coffee and wine transformed into bizarre, intolerable odors nobody else detected. With over 500 olfactory receptor sites capable of trillions of combinations, she might have been experiencing smells that don't exist in nature. Auditory hallucinations extend far beyond stereotypical voices. Many people hear their name called. Even Freud experienced this. Most intriguing are the commanding voices in life-threatening situations. Sachs himself, injured on a mountain, heard a strong, clear, commanding voice overriding his desire to rest. Mountain climber Joe Simpson, trapped in an Andean crevasse with a broken leg, described an identical voice directing his survival. Musical hallucinations create what patients call an intracranial jukebox, autonomous, detailed music that plays repetitively, sometimes drowning out actual sounds. Unlike controllable earworms, these hallucinations possess their own will. Brain imaging shows they activate extensive networks similar to actual music perception. The brain, deprived of normal auditory input through hearing loss or neurological damage, composes its own symphonies rather than accept silence. Every human culture has sought chemical pathways to transcendence, not recreationally, but fundamentally. We crave meaning, patterns, freedom from immediate surroundings. While some find transcendence through meditation or art, drugs offer transcendence on demand by directly stimulating complex brain functions. William James explored this in The Varieties of Religious Experience, describing nitrous oxide experiences revealing potential forms of consciousness entirely different from normal waking. Sacks himself created a pharmacologic launch pad in 1964 to see true indigo, a color he'd always wanted to experience. Facing a white wall, he demanded to see indigo, and suddenly a huge, trembling, pear-shaped blob of the purest indigo appeared. He believed it was the color of heaven, something Giotto spent a lifetime trying to capture. Daniel Breslav's psilocybin experience began with stars and colors of unprecedented brilliance. With eyes closed, he inhabited a distant world of abstractions. With eyes open, rooms changed size, faces crawled with imaginary lice, time distended dramatically, a floor every 100 years passed in an elevator. These aren't mere distortions, but complete reorganizations of perception, revealing the brain's remarkable capacity for generating experiences far beyond everyday range. Sarah hemorrhaged during delivery and found herself floating at the ceiling, watching doctors treat what she perceived as someone else's body, unaware it was her own, until she slipped back into my body like an arm sliding into the sleeve of a coat. De Maupassant, suffering from neurosyphilis, often saw his double sitting in an armchair. One patient with temporal lobe seizures saw his transparent double mowing the lawn, which is what I should have been doing. The double appeared slightly smaller, wore different clothing, and functioned as a guilty conscience. Even more common is sensing someone is there, a distinct presence just out of sight. Mountaineers and polar explorers frequently report this third man, or shadow person, either threatening or protective. Blanket induced this through electrical stimulation of the left temporoparietal junction. Modern experiments reveal how fragile our body boundaries are. Botvinnik and Cohen convinced subjects a rubber hand was their own through synchronized stroking. Henrik Ehrsson has induced experiences where people believe they possess a third arm, have swapped bodies, or feel embodied in miniature dolls. Our seemingly solid sense of self is actually a continuous construction, a best guess our brains make about where we end and the world begins. Perhaps the most profound insight from exploring hallucinations is how people learn to live with them, not as symptoms to eliminate, but as experiences to integrate. Virginia Hamilton Adair, who published her first acclaimed poetry collection at 83 after becoming completely blind, described her Charles Bonnet hallucinations as gifts from the Angel of Hallucinations, detailed scenes of birds transforming into medieval figures, stabs of sapphire, bags of rubies, a magic lantern show that provided vivid imagery amid her blindness. Charles Lullin enjoyed his hallucinations so much, he'd retreat to quiet rooms for hallucinatory breaks. Gertie, with Parkinson's disease, scheduled her gentleman visitor for evenings only. These aren't people succumbing to delusion. They're individuals incorporating unusual perceptual experiences into meaningful lives. What emerges is remarkable human resilience. When provided with understanding and context, most people accommodate even the most unusual experiences, some finding them enriching, providing companionship, or creative inspiration. This represents a profound shift, moving beyond seeing hallucinations as mere symptoms and recognizing them as complex experiences, revealing how actively our brains construct perceived reality. The line between perception and hallucination, between reality and imagination, is far thinner than we imagined, and that's not a weakness of the human mind, but one of its most extraordinary features.